Welcome to another sermon podcast from Central Presbyterian Church in Atlanta, Georgia. This episode will feature a sermon delivered by the Reverend Shannon J. Kirshner. The sermon is based on scripture from Psalm 98. Central's Sunday morning service for the 15th of May, 2026, seventh Sunday of Easter, was streamed to our website, our Facebook page, and our YouTube channel. A complete video or sermon audio replay of this service may be found on cpcatlanta.org. Select the upper right menu, and then Services under Worship.
As Kitsy read the psalm, did you hear the music in the air? When we listen, we hear the psalmist singing the melody with a clear, strong tone. The gathered community is filling in the melody with harmonies high and low. And as we listen a little closer, we might even hear the sea singing some of the bass notes and the floods clapping the rhythm, the hills on a high descant, the drums of Africa steady in the background, the sitar of India on the tenor line, and the lute of Lebanon with its mellow, deep sound. Together, all of it creates a music that in our chaotic and loud world, we don't always hear. It's the music of praise. It's the music of hope. It's a music of doxology, full of thanksgiving, full of promise, full of the assurance that God is in all and with all and above all, full of the Easter affirmation that God is our sovereign, no one else, nothing else. Do you hear that music yet, that new song, that song of praise? Oh, sing to the Lord a new song, our psalmist begins. A new song, one we sing until we are lost in wonder, love, and praise. But why, we might ask, would we even need to sing or to play a new song? Usually, we don't sing a new song unless the old one does not work the same anymore. We do not typically learn new words or create a new tune unless we feel the old one no longer expresses how we're feeling or what we want to say. Normally, we would only write or create or sing a new song in response to something unexpected and surprising bursting into our lives. Those are the moments when new songs are created. So we wonder then, why does Israel make this proclamation? Oh, sing to the Lord a new song. What had changed for them as they made their journey? What had burst into their collective life so unexpected and surprising that the old melodies and the old words could not quite express their experience of newness, of restoration? Perhaps this song might remind us. Does that sound familiar? Though it reminds us of God's lasting and healing presence, it's also music that has tinges of lament and loss. It's a song that acknowledges discouragement and the feeling like everything we are in doing is in vain. It's a song that has moments of despair and deep grief. It's a song that's currently reverberating around our country as southern state after southern state quickly redraw voting maps to make sure that black folks no longer have the chance to vote for someone with their life experience. It's a song that will be sung across our own state as our own governor has decided that we too will join that movement in time for 2028. Sometimes I feel discouraged and think my work's in vain. Those of us here in Georgia who sit underneath the shadows of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the late Congressman John Lewis find ourselves once again fighting the battles they fought 61 years ago. Some of you, I know, were in that fight. And now, was all of that work in vain, we might wonder, when we're in our most fearful moments? The Israelites had once felt that way. They had hoped that being God's chosen people, God's beloved ones, would make them okay. They had hoped God's presence meant that they would be protected from pain, from misery, from despair. I'm sure many of us can understand that hope. Some of us might hope that as people of faith, God would give us maximum protection from the fallout of the chaos of life. The Israelites had reason to feel that way. God had already delivered them out of slavery in Egypt. God had brought them out from under the rule of Pharaoh and led them into the promised land, to the land of restoration, to the land of hope and new life. Miriam, the prime composer of praise herself, had led them in their songs of praise and doxology. She gave words to their experience of liberation and freedom. They sang full-throated songs of jubilation and victory, songs full of harmony and major chords. And then war, defeat, humiliation, the fall of Judah, the fall of Israel, the destruction of their temple, the decimation of their Jerusalem, All symbols of their faith were mocked and dismissed as trivial, naive, and wrong. And most of the Jews were taken then, uprooted and forced to live together in exile, forced to cobble together a home in the land of Babylon, among unfamiliar people in an unfamiliar place. It's okay. It's okay. And because of all of that, those old songs of praise stuck in their throats and they choked on the stale refrains of old joy. I know, sound like that. For them, verses of freedom became verses of capture. Melodies of assurance became wails of lament. Yes, they were geographically displaced, but even more than that, God's chosen people, God's beloved ones, experienced a complete loss of the structured, reliable world that had once given them meaning and coherence. It was as if their lives had been gathered up, shredded into a million little pieces and thrown into the winds of chaos. As Christian ethicist Robin Lovin once wrote while talking about the irony of history, just when we are most confident that our manifest destiny is about to be realized, events put us somewhere that we do not expect to be, confronting questions that we are not quite prepared to answer. The people of Israel talked about it as feeling like they were down in the pit of Sheol, the pit of hell. The old songs of praise did not work anymore. They no longer fit. Rather, the people of Israel could only mutter minor keys of lament, of hopelessness, of pain and longing. Roberta Bondi, in her theological reflection on her life called Memories of God, remembers her own experience in the pit. She writes how she had grown up with the strong sense that she would never measure up. She would never be good enough for her parents. She would never be smart enough or pretty enough or faithful enough. She lived her life in a constant state of depression and despair. Finally, she reached a point of hopelessness that was new even for her. She was in her mid-40s, a wife, a mother, a teacher, but all she could think about were her unmet obligations, all the people she had hurt, all the suffering she had done, or her dirty refrigerator, her unfinished research, her unanswered correspondence. So she drug herself into her study and she sat down in a tall red chair and gave up. Utterly gave up. She speaks as if it were the light of her life went out. Her head fell on her chest and her breathing slowed. Her heart felt torn in half. She said she felt like a deep, dead body sinking into darkness. She had no idea how long she stayed there like that. Maybe a few moments, maybe a long time. All she knows is that all of a sudden and without any warning, she woke up. She woke up and began to repeat a line that her Roman Catholic tradition always said at Easter: the joy of the resurrection renews the whole world. The joy of the resurrection renews the whole world. The joy of the resurrection renews the whole world, she said. The joy of resurrection renews the whole world, she proclaimed. Every cell in Bondi's body heard those words of holy presence, of divine interruption, of promised deliverance, of new life and resurrection. And as she spoke those words, as she sang her new song, a song that only God could give, she felt, as she writes, her long broken heart healing. She felt a joy so fierce that it spilled out, she claims, and ran through her entire body and flickered around her like a flame. She laughed and she sang in that room all by herself. She danced in joy, for she had been in the pit, unable to see a future, unable to pull herself out. And in her faithfulness, she had given voice to her lament to God. And much to her surprise, God responded. God responded with a new song, responded with resurrection newness. And she was left singing, joining all of creation to a new song of praise, joy, and hope to her immortal, invisible God only wise. Somehow, some way, in the middle of the Israelites' despair, in the middle of their pit and complete dislocation, they too heard the call to come home. Their enemies had been defeated. They were being called back, called to return, brought from near and far back to their land of meaning, back to their land of promised freedom. And as they returned, they realized that, yes, they would have to rebuild. And yes, nothing would ever be the same again. And yes, that did not mean that all of life's trials and tribulations were behind them forever. Nevertheless, they were rising again. God was lifting their heads again out of their faithfulness. They too had cried out to God from the pit, just as they had cried out to God in Egypt, and God had heard their cries. God heard their songs of lament. God heard their pain. And again, God responded. God responded with a new song. God responded with resurrection newness. And they were left singing, calling for all creation to sing a new song of praise and joy and hope.
Thank you.
joy, love. The Israelites had to sing a new song, for the old songs of praise could not quite capture their feeling of peace, their sensation of joy, their growing love. Their old songs of praise could not quite express their appreciation of their liberation, their awareness of a promised future. They had to sing a new song, but not just them. All of creation had to sing a new song. All of the earth was called to burst forth into joyous song and to sing praises. The seas were invited to roar with gratitude. The floods were called on to clap their hands in adoration. The hills were commanded to mingle their voices together in pure joy. All of creation and all of God's creatures were told to sing, to sing, to sing, for God had remembered God's people. And God had delivered them again. And God would do so again and again and again for all of God's children until all of creation pulsed with the rhythm of praise and wholeness and shalom. And you and I, even in these days, perhaps especially in these days, as we continue to live out our lives in the powerful shadows of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. and Congressman John Lewis, and so many others, we too are invited to join our voices with theirs, to sing our part, to be alert to God's notes that dance in our hearts, and to listen for the singing as an act of resistance, as a way of claiming our God-given humanity, as our response, to use an African-American preaching refrain, to say, "But God." We are called to listen for the praise that plays out all around us despite what we see. For new life, for Easter life, requires doxology. It requires praise. We cannot keep silence. So listen. Do you hear it yet? We are not done. We will not give up. We will keep singing and we will keep dancing and we will keep remembering that God is the only one who will finish our story. So sing a new song here in this land, Atlanta, Georgia, Central Presbyterian Church. Amen.
We are glad you joined us for this podcast from Central Presbyterian Church. Central is a welcoming congregation of the Presbyterian Church USA located in downtown Atlanta across from the state capitol. For more information about the life, work and ministries, please visit our website at cpcatlanta.org. We also invite you to join us for worship and Sunday school and experience this exciting and diverse body of believers who seek to be bearers of God's justice in the world. Thanks again for listening.